Antichrist, Chapter 1, written by David W. Dyer. A number of years ago, I was taking an international flight to London. Beside me, on the plane, was a young lady. During the long flight, she began telling me about her father. Her father had been a judge. Not long before, he had lost his wife, I believe to cancer. He had recently retired and decided to make a trip to visit England, perhaps to distract his mind from his recent loss. There, while stepping off the curb, he looked to the left, as he usually did, to check for traffic. Seeing nothing, he proceeded into the street, where he was struck and killed by a bus coming from the other direction. You see, he was looking the wrong way. Consequently, he was blindsided. He was looking left, as he would have in the U.S., but not right, as he should have done in England. The reason for this is that traffic in England travels on the left and not the right side of the road. But there is a little lesson here. Many Christians are in danger of being blindsided by the coming Antichrist and end-time events. Why? It is because they are looking in the wrong direction. Due to the teachings they have received, they are focused on certain events coming together to fulfill some prophetic scriptures. But many of these teachings appear to be mistaken. There is every possibility that these believers have been misinformed and therefore misdirected. Many are looking today for a revived Roman Empire, which will rise up to be the kingdom of the Antichrist. Others believe that there will be a one-world government, perhaps with the UN taking over the world. Still others think that the Antichrist will be a backslidden Christian or a former Jew. Many seem to think that some kind of microchip will be the mark of the beast. Yet, as we take a careful look at the prophecies concerning these things, an entirely different picture emerges. This book is an attempt to provide a new viewpoint concerning the end times. Here we will investigate from the scriptures exactly the location from which the Antichrist must arise. Then we will look at precisely where his 10 kings and their kingdoms will be located. This then will enable believers to look in the right direction and not be taken by surprise when these events begin to unfold. In the church today, there is much confusion and speculation about the future Antichrist. However, many of the scriptures concerning him and his soon arising are quite clear and easy to understand. These things are not as mysterious and difficult as they may seem. As we investigate some Old and New Testament prophecies together, please do not be intimidated by them. At first, the imagery of beasts, horns, etc. can seem a little daunting. However, the Bible uses these images in a consistent, logical manner. In many cases, they are almost as simple as children's stories, using pictures and figures such as animals to explain the future. So once you understand how these figures are used to typify certain kingdoms and leaders, everything will seem quite easy to understand. Although this author does not claim to understand every detail of every verse, the truths which we will be looking at together are quite simple and plain. Where does the Antichrist come from? The first thing which is strikingly clear as we read the prophecies in the book of Daniel is where the Antichrist comes from. He arises in the Middle East. That is correct. The Antichrist does not come from Rome or from Europe at all, but clearly arises from the Middle East. Please remember this fact, because it is an important key for us to understand the events which will unfold at the end of this age. You may find the following discussion easier to understand if you take a moment and read Daniel chapter 8. At this time, the origin of the Antichrist is perhaps most evident in the vision which we find in Daniel chapter 8. This vision concerns two animals, a ram which has two horns, and a male goat which has one big horn. In this vision, the male goat attacks the ram and destroys him. An angel explains to Daniel what these two animals represent. The ram which you saw having the two horns, they are the kings of Media and Persia. Daniel chapter 8, verse 20. So the ram is the Medo-Persian Empire, and the two horns represent the leaders of this empire. This is the empire which conquered Babylon in the days of Daniel. Daniel chapter 5, verses 30 and 31. The goat represents the empire of Alexander the Great. The angel explains, and the male goat is the kingdom of Greece. The large horn that is between its eyes is the first king. Daniel chapter 8, verse 21. So we understand the ram represents the Medo-Persian Empire, and the goat represents the empire of Alexander the Great. It is an historical fact that Alexander the Great conquered the Medo-Persian Empire. His kingdom was centered in Greece. From Greece, his kingdom spread east through what today is known as Turkey, Iraq, Iran, Afghanistan, all the way to India. He also conquered to the south, encompassing the Middle East and Egypt. It is worth noting here that Alexander's kingdom did not include much of modern-day Europe. Later in the vision, the large horn on the goat representing Alexander the Great is broken. This happens after he became very great and strong. Daniel chapter 8, verse 8. In the place of this one horn on the goat, four other horns appear. Alexander died suddenly at the peak of his power. How he died is still debated. Whether it was in a drunken fit or from some accident or poison is not certain. We will probably only know this later on. But the important thing here is that he died abruptly. After his death, his empire was divided among four of his generals. This too, the Bible predicts by saying, the large horn was broken, and in place of it, four notable ones, horns, came up towards the four winds of heaven. Daniel chapter 8, verse 8. The four horns here are representative of these four leaders. The reason that all this history is important to us is that it shows us clearly where the Antichrist will come from. He will arise from the territory of one of these four generals. We know this because of the scripture which says, out of one of them, referring to the four horns, came a little horn which grew exceeding great toward the south, toward the east, and towards the glorious land, which probably means Israel. Daniel chapter 8, verse 9. In the scriptures, the Antichrist is sometimes referred to as a little horn. Daniel chapter 8, verse 9. Chapter 7, verse 8. Verse 11, verse 20, and verse 21. It is clear that this little horn is the Antichrist because of his activities, which are described in the following verses in Daniel chapter 8, verses 10 through 13, and also in the verses of chapter 7, which are listed above. I hope that we have not lost any readers here. This has all been very simple. Learning a little bit of history may tax your mind a little, but please do not become faint. This may be new information for you, but it is really not complicated. Sometimes learning something new can be a little intimidating, but it is worth the effort just to concentrate a bit and learn some ancient history. There have only been two animals and a few horns introduced which are essential to us. The most important of these are the ram, the goat, and the little horn, corresponding to the Medo-Persian Empire, Alexander the Great, and Antichrist. So now we understand that it is from part of Alexander's empire that the future Antichrist will come. This gives a clear direction in which to look. The vision which Daniel saw does not focus upon Europe, but on parts of the globe which are east and south of Greece. This is quite a good clue. But God does not leave us here to speculate. he defines even further for us exactly from where the man of sin will come. He gives us even more explicit prophecy and even more explicit vision. The vision of chapters 10 and 11 of Daniel are brought by a glorious angel in answer to Daniel's prayers. Daniel chapter 10 verses 5 and 6. He was fasting and praying for more understanding about what the future would bring. God heard his prayers and sent an angel to enlighten him, but this messenger was delayed by another evil angel 3 full weeks. Daniel chapter 10 verse 2, or 21 days. Daniel chapter 10 verses 12 and 13. It may be that the understanding of this vision has been delayed for many in these days also, but I believe that as we are approaching the end of this age, God is opening up his word and wants to give his children understanding of what is coming upon us. In this vision, God focuses our attention even more specifically upon just where the Antichrist will arise. It begins with what for us now is ancient history. Simply repeating the last vision, we begin by being told about the future of the Medo-Persian Empire. You might remember that Daniel was carried away captive from Israel into Babylon. Later, Babylon was conquered by the Medes and the Persians. So the vision begins from where Daniel was at that time and proceeds to explain the future. Next, we are again told about Alexander the Great, Daniel chapter 11, verse 3, and of his 4 generals who divide the empire, Daniel chapter 11, verse 4. Then the vision focuses upon 2 of these 4 generals. One is called the King of the South, Daniel chapter 11, verse 5. Historically, this king was a general named Ptolemy who assumed control of Egypt after Alexander's death. Since Egypt is south of Israel, calling him the King of the South makes perfect sense for an Israelite such as Daniel. The other king is the King of the North, Daniel chapter 11, verse 6. The general who assumed control of the area north of Egypt was someone named Seleucus. He took command of what today is known as the Middle East. As we proceed, it will become clear that the Antichrist arises out of the territory of one of these 2 generals. Therefore, we have now narrowed down the area at which we must look. Instead of the 4 horns or generals, now we have only 2 left. The reasons for this will become clear as we proceed. The next passages of this chapter deal with the relationships between these 2 kings and their successors. It is a history which covers several 100 years and involves various rulers who came after the King of the North and the King of the South. As you read this passage, you will notice a series of wars, intrigues, marriages, and interactions between these 2 kingdoms. These events, which were predicted beforehand by God, have already happened. An abbreviated list is given below to give the reader an idea of how all this took place. Kings of the North, Seleucus, 1. Nicator, 312 to 281 BC, one of his princes, verse 5. Antiochus I Soter, 281 to 261 BC, not mentioned. Antiochus I Theos, 261 to 246 BC, him who strengthened her, verse 6. Seleucus Callinicus, 247 to 226 BC, king of the north, verse 7. Seleucus III, 226 to 223 BC, and Antiochus III the Great, 223 to 187 BC, his sons, verse 10. Seleucus Philopater, 187 to 175 BC, one who imposes taxes, verse 20. Antiochus IV Epiphanes, 175 to 164 BC, verses 21 to 35. Possibly. Kings of the South. Ptolemy I Soter, 323 to 285 BC, King of the South, verse 5. Ptolemy II, Philadelphus, 285 to 246 BC, one shall arise in his place, verse 7. Ptolemy III, Euergetes, 246 to 221 BC, one shall arise in his place, verse 7. Ptolemy Philopater, 221 to 203 BC, king of the south, verse 11. Ptolemy V, Epiphanes, 203 to sometime. Last hymn, verse 17. Succeeding kings of the south, not clear. This, then, is a very short history of two of Alexander's generals or horns and their successors. If you are interested in a more detailed study of this subject, I would like to recommend to you a book entitled Daniel, The Key to Prophetic Revelation by John F. Walvoord, published by Moody Press. According to Mr. Walvoord, this vision of Daniel, chapter 11, up until verse 35, contains 135 statements, which have already been literally fulfilled. Antiochus 4, Epiphanes. Our investigation will now continue by focusing on someone named Antiochus Epiphanes. He is the last ruler on our King of the North list. He is the last successor mentioned in the Bible of one of Alexander's generals, the King of the North. Walvoord states, the title Epiphanes, meaning glorious, was a title which Antiochus gave himself, in keeping with his desire to be regarded as God. This ruler is called a vile person. Daniel chapter 11, verse 21. He was not a legitimate heir to the throne of the Syrian kingdom, but it appears that he was a very shrewd operator. He managed to take control of the kingdom through intrigue. Perhaps because of this, he was not given the honor of royalty. Daniel chapter 11, verse 21. It appears that Antiochus was power-hungry, sneaky, and violent. Vile seems to be a very accurate description of him. After consolidating his power, he begins to persecute the Jewish people. He worked to force them to change their laws, including stopping their sacrifices. He is reported to have sacrificed a sow on their sacred altar in the temple and even set up an idol there. This was an act of desecration. The Jewish people regard pigs as unclean. Also, their sacrifices were always done with male animals, so the use of a female pig was an attempt to pollute and dishonor the Jewish religion. This is the event which the Jews of that day called the Abomination of Desolation. It seems that Antiochus Epiphanes had a hatred for the Jews. He tried to do whatever he could to destroy their religion, including favoring any who would turn their back on the law and work along with him to defile the Jewish nation. Antiochus is important to us in our discussion for the following reason. As this prophecy of chapter 11 of Daniel progresses, Antiochus morphs or changes into the Antichrist. Up until a certain point, the prophecy is very easily verified historically. The different actions, wars, etc. predicted by God through Daniel actually happened. But around verse 35, a peculiar thing happens. The prophecy ceases to have any historical fulfillment. It seems as if the sacred writing takes a great leap through history, from Antiochus Epiphanes to the Antichrist. It is as if Antiochus becomes the Antichrist in a manner of speaking during the prophecy. It seems very clear that God is demonstrating for us something important. He is showing us the exact location from which the Antichrist will come. This leap of history is not just some kind of prophetic accident. Instead, it is God's way of revealing to us the origin of the future enemy of his people. Beginning with the Babylonian Empire, following on through the Medo-Persian reign, Alexander the Great, his four generals, and their successors, right on down to Antiochus, the Bible focuses us down to exactly the point of origin of the Antichrist. Although this is ancient history, it is really not very difficult to understand. In the book of Revelation, we also read about the Antichrist or the beast, but here a mysterious fact is mentioned. It almost looks like this Antichrist figure has been on the earth before. During the end times, this beast seems to be resurrected from the bottomless pit. We read, "The beast that you saw was, and is not, and will ascend out of the bottomless pit, and then go into perdition. And those who dwell on the earth will marvel, whose names are not written in the book of life from the foundation of the world, when they see the beast that was, and is not, and yet is, or shall be present." Revelation chapter 17, verse 8. It is possible that this beast which reappears is Antiochus Epiphanes. Perhaps it is not the literal person, but just as John the Baptist came in the spirit and power of Elijah, Luke chapter 1, verse 17, so too the spirit of this vile person reappears again to persecute God's people. Certainly the same spirit of hatred for and persecution of God's people that seemed to possess Antiochus will be upon the end times beast. This would fit very well with what we have been seeing about Antiochus turning into the Antichrist in the prophecy which we have been studying. So here we have laid out clearly for us the exact origin of the Antichrist. He will come out of the Seleucid Empire and form that portion of the globe which Antiochus Epiphanes governed. He will originate from and rule over the Middle East. So far we have examined two prophetic visions which confirm this. Now we will go on to investigate still another revelation which also says the same thing. The vision of the four beasts. We have studied here two prophecies which point us to the origins of the Antichrist, but there is still more. Another prophecy in the book of Daniel confirms what we have been seeing. This vision shows us where the empire of the beast will be situated. Not only are we shown where the Antichrist comes from, but also where the 10 nations over which he rules will be. His kingdom will also be located in the Middle East. The prophecy concerning the four beasts is found in Daniel chapter 7. It is of special importance to us since it is so clear and speaks to us so much. Therefore, we will examine this vision at some length to extract the maximum gain from it. The four beasts or animal figures which are seen by Daniel are a lion, a bear, a leopard, and a fierce-looking beast that is not likened to any specific animal. These beasts represent kingdoms which are of some importance in the world. Most Bible teachers have taught that these kingdoms are simply a repetition of what we have already been seeing. They think that these beasts are representative of 1. The lion, equal the Babylonian Empire, 2. The bear, equal the Medo-Persians, 3. The leopard, equals Alexander the Great, 4. The dreadful, equals the Roman Empire, which conquered the successors of Alexander, and then, 5. The Antichrist. Well, now you might say, wait a minute, the scriptures only mention 4 beasts, but you have listed 5 empires. The explanation for this is quite simple. The Bible explains to us that the 10 horns of the Antichrist empire arise out of the remnants of the fourth beast kingdom. Therefore, the last empire is revived, so to speak, turning 4 beasts into 5 kingdoms. We read concerning the fourth beast, "The 10 horns of the Antichrist empire are 10 kings who shall arise from this fourth kingdom." Daniel chapter 7, verse 24. This is a very important clue for us. The 10 kings and their 10 kingdoms who form the empire of the Antichrist arise out of this fourth kingdom. Therefore, it is very important for us to identify this fourth dreadful and terrible beast. As we have mentioned, many Bible expositors have identified this fourth animal or beast as the Roman Empire. Perhaps you have heard that there will be a revived Roman Empire, which will be the kingdom of the Antichrist. This passage is the origin of this teaching. Yet there are a few problems with such an understanding. The most notable difficulty is that when we read these verses carefully, it becomes clear that each of these four beasts is in existence when Jesus returns to this earth. The rulers of these nations are alive and well when our Lord comes to judge the nations. Therefore, they cannot be these ancient historical kingdoms. They must be nations which are contemporaries of the Antichrist. They must be countries which we can identify today. How can I make such a statement? Let us look together at Daniel chapter 7, verses 9 through 12. In verses 9 and 10, Jesus is sitting on his throne. His description matches the one of his appearance in the first part of the book of Revelation. He is preparing to judge the nations. But in verse 11, the Antichrist comes to his attention due to the sound of his great pompous words. At this point, the beast Antichrist is killed, but the other beasts, the lion, the bear, and the leopard, referring to the rulers of these nations, receive a different fate. They lose their kingdoms, but are allowed to remain alive for a while longer. We read in verse 11, "As for the rest of the beast, they had their dominion taken away, yet their lives were prolonged for a season and a time." In order for this verse to make any sense, these other empires must exist at the time of the Antichrist. They cannot be ancient kingdoms. For example, the kingdom of Babylon was destroyed by the Medes and the Persians. Of course, you remember what happened to the ruler. The handwriting was on the wall. That very night, Belshazzar, king of the Chaldeans, Babylonians, was slain, Daniel chapter 6, verse 30. His kingdom certainly was taken away, but his life was not prolonged. The same is true of Alexander the Great. As we have studied, he died unexpectedly at the peak of his power. His kingdom was taken away too, but his life was not prolonged for any season of time. Further, the deaths of these rulers was not something that occurred when Christ returned and sat on his throne of judgment. These scriptures do not fit with an historical interpretation. Therefore, these kingdoms cannot be Babylon, Alexander the Great, the Medes and the Persians, and Rome. So, for a better interpretation, we must look in another direction, which will be discussed further as we proceed. In God's Word, we find even more difficulty with the revived Roman Empire idea. Let us now turn to verse 17 of chapter 7. Here we read that those great beasts, which are four kings, representing their kingdoms, which shall arise out of the earth. I include the word shall here, following the translations of the Septuagint, the King James Version, the New American Standard Bible, the American Standard of 1901, John Darby in his New Translation, and possibly others. You see, here we have a problem. This vision was given to Daniel in the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon, Daniel chapter 7, verse 1. He was the last ruler of Babylon. So this is very near the end of the Babylonian Empire. But we hear the angel explaining that four beasts shall arise, meaning sometime in the future. Therefore, this cannot include Babylon, since it had already arisen long ago. If then Babylon is not the lion, the other beast cannot follow the traditional interpretation either. The only logical conclusion we can draw is that the angel is not referring to what we now know as four historical kingdoms, but of future ones, kingdoms which will exist at the same time as the Antichrist. Consequently, we should not view this prophecy as a simple repetition of the one before it, but a new revelation about the last days. The conclusion of all this is that the Bible is not teaching us about a revived Roman Empire. An honest, unbiased examination of the verses at hand do not lead us to this conclusion. Therefore, Europe, the common market, the Pope, and other such teachings based on the revived Roman Empire theory must be discarded. The Seven Mountains. Another verse which many teachers often cite to support a revived Roman Empire teaching is found in Revelation chapter 17, verses 9 and 10. We have already studied these verses about seven mountains in the first part of this end time series entitled Babylon. In the previous book, we learned that the seven mountains also do not point to Rome as a source of the Antichrist Empire. If you have any doubts about this, please review chapter 4 of that book entitled Mountains, Heads, and Kings. What we studied in the book Babylon is that even in John's day, there were no longer seven prophetic mountains. Five of them had already fallen. Revelation chapter 17, verse 10. This left only two. Therefore, this cannot be and is not a reference to Rome. Consequently, the revived Roman Empire is not in view. Also, we cannot take our inspiration from secular literature such as the story of Romulus and Remus or the Iliad and the Odyssey, but only the Word of God. Nowhere in the Bible is Rome referred to as the city on seven hills or any similar thing. Unfortunately, the King James Version of the Bible and the New King James Version is responsible for much confusion here. This version introduces an extra word in the text which is in no Greek manuscript that I can find, including the Textus Receptus, from which the KJV was taken. It is this extra word which produces much error. This is the word there. In the New King James Version, chapter 17, verses 9 and 10, we read, "The seven heads are seven mountains. There are also seven kings." Putting the word there in this verse disassociates the mountains and the kings grammatically. Now, instead of being equal, they are additional. So then when you read five have fallen, this could refer only to the kings, leaving the seven mountains intact. But in fact, in the original Greek texts, the word there does not appear. All of them read instead, "The seven heads are seven mountains and are seven kings." The heads, mountains, and kings are all equal. So then, when we read that five have fallen, this not only refers to the kings, but to the mountains and heads as well. This, then, is not a reference to Rome or to the Roman Empire. Who are the four beasts? We have been discussing the four beasts, the lion, the bear, the leopard, and the terrible. Then we have been seeing that these cannot be Babylon, Medo-Persia, Alexander, and Rome. But if then the fourth beast is not Rome and the other beasts are more contemporary kingdoms, who could they be? Seeing who these beasts might be will greatly help us in knowing where the Antichrist Empire will arise. Identifying these countries will, of course, involve a little bit of speculation. These animals representing kingdoms are impossible to identify with total certainty. So please bear with me as we consider the possibilities together. Remember that we are looking for empires which can still be identified today. The fourth one of these kingdoms, although it still exists, will have largely disintegrated. It is from the remnants of this kingdom that the ten horns of the Antichrist Empire will emerge. Daniel chapter 7, verse 24. These beasts rise up from the Great Sea, which is usually identified as the Mediterranean. Their arising from the sea is precipitated by a violent storm caused by the four winds of heaven. Daniel chapter 7, verse 2. This could indicate that these four empires are, over a period of time, in conflict with one another for control of and or supremacy in the Mediterranean region. This would include Europe, North Africa, and the Middle East. The first beast is a lion which has wings like an eagle. As Daniel watches this vision, the wings are plucked off and the lion is made to stand up on 2 feet like a man, and its own heart is replaced with a human one. Daniel chapter 7, verse 4. The two wings might represent rapidity of movement or expansion of the empire. This conclusion would come from the fact that of all the animals, birds are certainly the fastest and travel further. If we accept this interpretation, having the wings removed would signify an end to rapid expansion. Standing on its feet like a man and receiving a man's heart seems to show that what was once a mighty, warlike kingdom would become somewhat weak and human. One country which might fit this description today would be Great Britain. Once the sun never set on their empire. At one time, they expanded their influence and holdings rapidly over the entire globe. But today, things have changed. Now Great Britain is much less significant on the world scene. She has become much less lion-like and much more human. Interestingly, the symbol for this nation is a lion. Over the last few centuries, they have been directly involved in conflicts for control of the Mediterranean region. The next beast we see is a bear. It was raised up on one side. Daniel chapter 7, verse 5. Some Bible translators say that this could mean that it established for itself one dominion, which seems to be a more logical translation. The bear has three ribs in its mouth. It is told, "Arise, devour much flesh." Meditating on the bear, Russia or the old Soviet Union comes to mind. Certainly her history is a very bloody one, with countless millions of her own people being killed for one reason or another, especially under communist domination. This would fulfill the devour much flesh part of the vision. If Russia is the bear, then the three ribs could represent the countries of Estonia, Latvia, and Lithuania, which it first seized when expanding its territory. Russia, too, has been involved in conflicts over the part of the world which we have mentioned through the years. The third beast is a leopard. Its notable features are four heads and four wings. Not much more is said about it, except that dominion is given to it. About heads and horns. Before we proceed, we must study an important clue to understanding Bible prophecy. Please remember this because we will refer to it again in our later discussions. Many beasts which appear in prophetic visions have several heads or multiple horns. What does this mean? When a prophetic animal has several heads, this refers to a succession of rulers. This can be clearly seen by our seven heads, which we discussed in Revelation, where the seven heads refer to a succession of seven rulers. This succession does not need to be immediate, but, as the case of Babylon, these rulers can be separated by hundreds, if not thousands, of years. On the other hand, when the animal has multiple horns, this indicates simultaneous rulers. We can see this by looking at the Antichrist Empire. There we find 10 horns, indicating 10 rulers who hold power together with him, all at the same time. So we have a simple formula. Several heads equal a succession of rulers. Several horns equal simultaneous rulers. By the way, this understanding discounts the leopard beast from being Alexander's empire and his four generals. Four simultaneous rulers should be represented by four horns, as they certainly are in the vision of the ram and the male goat, not by four heads which appear on the leopard. Applying this formula to the leopard, we would then need to look for an empire in the region which we have described, which has had or will have a prominent progression of four rulers. The four wings might mean that each of these rulers rises up rapidly to power. For me, this beast is not so easy to identify. No nation springs to mind in this region which has been prominently involved in the conflicts and has the national symbol of a leopard. However, there is one country which has had a notable succession of rulers and has been much involved in the conflicts of that area. It is Germany, of which I speak. When Adolf Hitler came to power, he claimed that his kingdom was the Third Reich. Reich means kingdom in the German language. He identified his rule as being the third in a series of important rulers. Perhaps the earlier Otto von Bismarck and Kaiser Wilhelm could be the two previous ones which he was recognizing. Although I do not know the history of these two earlier rulers, certainly Hitler's rise to power was startlingly rapid. This would fit with the four wings. If this is the correct identification of the leopard, then we should soon see another strong, charismatic leader quickly rising up to power in Germany. Such a ruler does not need to be a Nazi. He only needs to be someone who captures the hearts of the German people and galvanizes the population to some end. The fourth beast is not described in a way that is easy to identify. That is to say, it is not compared to some kind of animal which we could recognize. We are told that this beast has large iron teeth and bronze claws, Daniel chapter 7 verses 7 and 19. It is further described as being dreadful and terrible, exceedingly strong. Significantly, it is different from the beasts that were before it. This beast decisively smashes all opposition wherever it goes. For the identity of this beast, I would like to select the Ottoman Empire or the Ottoman Turks. The reason I choose this empire is that it was located in the exact spot which the other prophecies indicate. Also, it was a kingdom of recent times which was extremely powerful and large before its demise. Most Westerners know little about this empire. Some have never even heard of it. Yet it was a dominant, overwhelming force in the region about which we speak for hundreds of years, right up until after the First World War. The reason for this kingdom being different from the other three would be that the others were secular empires. The fourth beast kingdom would be a religious one. In recent years, this kingdom has fallen into pieces. What remains is the country of Turkey. Yet, it will be out of this disintegrated empire that the 10 nations of the Antichrist Alliance appear. Remember that we read, the 10 horns are 10 kings who shall arise from this fourth beast kingdom, Daniel chapter 7, verse 24. As we have already studied, it is this area of the world, the Middle East, from which the Antichrist and his 10 nations will come. Perhaps it would benefit all the readers to take a little time and review just what the Ottoman Empire was all about. Here I am quoting excerpts from the website www.wsu.edu:880/DEE/Ottoman/Ottoman1.htm. Quote, "The Ottomans are one of the greatest and most powerful civilizations of the modern period. The empire they built was the largest and most influential of the Muslim empires of the modern period, and their culture and military expansion crossed over into Europe. Not since the expansion of Islam into Spain in the 8th century had Islam seemed poised to establish a European presence as it did in the 16th and 17th centuries. Like that earlier expansion, the Ottomans established an empire over European territory and established Islamic traditions and culture that last to the current day. The Muslims in Bosnia are the last descendants of the Ottoman presence in Europe. The Ottoman Empire lasted until the 20th century. While historians like to talk about empires in terms of growth and decline, the Ottomans were a force to be reckoned with militarily and culturally right up until the breakup of the empire in the first decades of this century. We will start with the greatest figure of Ottoman history, the Sultan Suleiman, who built from the conquests of his father a great city, military machine, empire, and culture. The Ottomans arose from the obscure reaches of Anatolia in the west of Turkey. These Western Turks were called the Oghuz. Some of them were warriors to the Islamic faith, carrying out jihad, or holy struggle, to spread the faith among hostile unbelievers. In 1402, the Ottomans moved their capital to Edirne in Europe, where they threatened Constantinople. The city seemed to defy the great expansion of Islam. No matter how much territory fell to the Muslims, Constantinople resisted every siege and every invasion. The Ottomans wanted to break this cycle. Not only would the seizure of Constantinople represent a powerful symbol of Ottoman power, but it would make the Ottomans master of East-West trade. In 1453, Sultan Mehmed, 1451-1481, who was also called the Conqueror, finally took this one last remnant of Byzantium and renamed it Istanbul. From that point onwards, the capital of the Ottoman Europe would remain fixed in Istanbul, and under the patronage of the Ottoman sultans became one of the wealthiest and most cultured cities of the early modern world. The Ottoman Empire had been started. It expanded greatly under Sultan Selim, 1512-1520, but it was under his son, Sultan Suleiman, 1520-1566, called the lawmaker in Islamic history and the magnificent in Europe, that the empire would reach its greatest expansion over Asia and Europe. End quote. Author's note. This empire was divided up after World War I. The Ottomans sided with the Germans and were defeated. Then their holdings were parceled out between several European nations. Many territorial boundaries were redrawn. This conquest and subjugation of the Islamic world by the European powers after hundreds of years of prosperity and dominance is the source of much of the hatred against the West you will find among the Muslims today. One great hope for many Muslims is that their empire and culture will someday be restored to its former prominence and greatness. It is worth noting in the above article how they are especially proud when Islam conquers and takes root in Europe. You see, this empire was really different from all the others. They were trying to prove something. They were attempting to establish a religious empire and demonstrate that their religious society was superior in every respect, culturally, militarily, economically, and politically, to that of those they fought against. For them, Western civilization was a Christian culture. They were, in many respects, anti-Christian. If you speak to any Muslims today, they will know all about the history of this recent empire. Certainly they conquered, smashed, trampled, broke in pieces, and devoured much of the civilized world of their day. This empire fits very readily into the picture of what we are calling the Fourth Beast. It is from the territory once held by this Fourth Beast that the ten horns of the Antichrist Empire come. From this area arise, and probably have already risen, 10 nations. It is probable that there are more than 10 countries which occupy the territory once ruled by the Ottomans. This does not change our understanding. What is necessary is that the 10 nations which will form the Antichrist Empire will come from the area of former Ottoman rule. Thus, this vision, too, dovetails nicely with the other prophecies which we have been studying. Nebuchadnezzar's image. King Nebuchadnezzar had a dream, a very troubling dream. In this dream, he sees what will happen in the future. He views a succession of empires beginning with his own and then continuing on through 4 more. The last empire which formed part of this huge image is the reign of the Antichrist. During his dream, a stone is cut out of some location without human hands. This certainly is a supernatural stone. It then smashes the feet of this image. Not only the feet are destroyed, but all the other parts of the image were also crushed together and blown away like chaff. Daniel chapter 2, verse 35. This stone represents the coming kingdom of Jesus Christ. Our Lord Jesus will return to earth, smash the Antichrist empire, and extend his authority over all the inhabited earth. Daniel chapter 2, verses 44 and 45. In this image, we are presented with a succession of kingdoms. Beginning with Babylon, the head of gold, we then progress through the Medo-Persians, chest and arms of silver, and Alexander the Great, belly and thighs of bronze, the Roman Empire, legs of iron, and finally the Antichrist kingdom. Feet of iron and clay. Daniel chapter 2, verses 31 through 43. During this period of time, there was no doubt many other great kingdoms on the earth. China certainly had its magnificent dynasties for thousands of years. Egypt has often been a dominant force on the world scene. There have been great empires in South America and Africa. Yet none of these kingdoms have a part in this image which Nebuchadnezzar saw. Why not? What is it about these particular kingdoms which make up the image that makes them special? All the empires which constitute this image have one thing in common. They all conquered the Middle East. They all had influence over the Holy Land, Israel. Israel has been and always will be the focus of God's attention. When and if any other nation begins to gain control or influence over this part of the world, God takes notice. This is the glue that holds all the parts of Nebuchadnezzar's image together. Each one, in succession, took control over the Holy Land. Some theologians, noticing that the Roman Empire in this vision is succeeded by the Antichrist, then have mistakenly predicted a revived Roman Empire. From there, they go on to teach about the European common market being the kingdom of the coming beast. However, nothing in this revelation suggests this. No verse would give rise to such an interpretation. Each of these kingdoms was not a revival of the former one. These were merely a series of empires which touched upon God's people, the Jews. The last kingdom, that of the Antichrist, is simply the last one in this succession which will dominate the land of Israel. As we have mentioned, the cohesive part of this image is that all these kingdoms ruled the Middle East. This is the part of the world that they conquered and so makes them part of this image. In order for any coming empire to be included in this list, it too must conquer and dominate the Middle East and the land of Israel. The possibility of a revived Roman Empire such as the common market doing so is extremely remote. Therefore, this dream also supports our thesis. The coming Antichrist must have as part of his kingdom the Middle East. He must eventually dominate the land of Israel. There is nothing in this supernatural dream which would mandate a revival of the Roman Empire. By the way, the Ottoman Empire about which we have spoken came after the Romans and for some reason is not included in this revelation. In this dream, we are transported from the kingdom which dominated Israel at the time of Christ to the one which will do the same before his second coming. Much ado has been made by many Bible teachers about the fact that this image has 2 legs and 10 toes. They then compare this to the Roman Empire being divided into two parts, East and West, and the Antichrist kingdom having 10 kings. Therefore, they insist, the beast territory must be a revived Roman Empire. The logic of this, if there is any logic, completely escapes me. The image must have 2 legs and 10 toes because it is a human image. Almost all human beings have 2 legs and 10 toes. But how all this dictates a revived Roman Empire is really beyond me. Even in the supernatural interpretation of the dream, the 2 legs are not said to be a divided empire, and, somewhat surprisingly, the 10 toes are not said to represent the 10 kings of the Antichrist. Daniel chapter 2, verses 42 and 43. It is true that the coming beast will control part of the world, the Middle East, which was once ruled by Rome. It will assume authority over that particular part of the old Roman Empire. This much is biblical and clear. Yet this empire coming from and centered in the Middle East, as well as the other prophecies clearly show, could not be considered a revival of the Roman Empire. It would only qualify for this if it conquered a good part of Europe also, therefore encompassing much of the same territory as Rome did. This too is very, very unlikely. Further, and very importantly, the only biblical revived empire we have seen has been shown in our previous discussion not to be Rome. Daniel chapter 7, verse 24. In short, the only strong basis for a revival of Rome is the fact that so many insist that it must be so. There are no clear verses which would mandate this conclusion. If we can lay aside tradition and the general clamor of those who have not really studied these things thoroughly and honestly, we will be led to a more logical and biblical understanding. The Antichrist Empire arises from and will be centered in the Middle East. This conclusion points very strongly to a revived Ottoman Empire with all its Muslim roots. This too fits very nicely with our present-day geopolitical situation. You have just listened to a chapter from one of David Dyer's books. These recordings or copies of the book are available at www.agrainofwheat.com. No spaces, all small letters. That's www.agrainofwheat.com.